right, so I'm going to talk about a long title, Robust Fuzzy Extractors and Authenticated Key Agreements from Closed Secrets. This work is by Yevgeny Dodis, Jonathan Katz, the traveling Adam Smith, and myself. And it appeared at the Crypto in August. So here it is. Here's the first setting we consider. The first setting is the setting of information theoretic key agreements. So let's say we have two players. I decided to break with tradition and name them Alan and Bonnie. And, you know, people put up clip art of cute whatever, so Alice's and Bob's. I decided it was more interesting.
This is your contribution?
This is our contribution. this is contribution zero. Okay, so there's Alan and Bonnie, and they share a secret W, which is not necessarily uniform, and they want to agree on a uniform secret W. Okay. So that's the setting. And why might it not be uniform? Sort of, it's a reasonable question to ask. You know, isn't this artificial? Come on, things are always uniform if you try hard enough. Might not be uniform for more interesting reasons than just we don't know how to flip coins. It might be that Eve knows something about W, and we don't know what she knows. Right, so it's not uniform from the adversary's point of view, even though somehow perhaps originally it was uniform, but it's not. So it's not uniform, and there's no secure channel between Alan and Bonnie, because otherwise things would be trivial. If you want to agree on a uniform secret R, you just put it down the secure pipe. Alan puts it in the pipe, Bonnie takes it out, there's the uniform secret R. So there's no secure channel, the channel leaks to you. That would be too dry. Although, now that you mentioned you gave me. Alright.
You should answer as a
thought. Okay, so there's no secure channel, else these things would be trivial, but things are almost trivial now. We can just use an extractor. And just a quick reminder of what an extractor is. You put in W that's not necessarily uniform but has some entropy, specifically min entropy that I'll denote by M. And you put in some uniform seed, and I will denote seed by I throughout the talk, and out comes a uniform R, right? So what you can do then is send this I across, and what's very important is that I and R are not just uniform individually, but they're jointly uniform. So even if you see I, R still looks uniform to you. Right? So then Alan can send this, can choose a random I, do the extraction, send this across, and it goes to Eve as well, but that's not a problem because R looks uniform to Eve, even given I, so that's all right. And then Bonnie does the same thing, and out comes R. Okay. So what are the problems that we address? So this is all known, right? There's nothing to do here. Well, what if Eve is active? So now we don't have that she just benignly listens in on the channel. So Alan sends I, and out comes I prime, right? Because Eve can intercept it. So there's I prime that Bonnie is putting into the extractor, which means there's R prime that she's getting, which can cause all sorts of problems, because now, you know, one party has R, the other has R prime. They're somehow correlated in weird ways. You start using them, who knows, maybe the entire secret W will be out of it. And what we need is a property that we call robustness, which is that Eve can't mess with this too much. And basically, as soon as Eve modifies this I prime, then Bonnie will just refuse to work. Her extractor will somehow magically output bottom, which means I don't want to play. And this essentially reduces Eve to the denial of service attack, which an active adversary can always do, right? She can just not allow I to pass on the channel, and then there's nothing we can do. This says that if she allows I to pass modify, then Bonnie will notice it and will pretend that nothing, it'll be as if nothing ever was sent religion. Okay, so that's one problem that we address. And the second problem that we address is, what if this W that Alan and Bonnie share is noisy? Right? So you don't actually have W, you have W on your left and W prime on your right. And they're slightly different. And then, of course, again, you put W prime into the extractor, you get some R prime, and we don't want this to happen. But this is not necessarily an adversarial setting, it's just that there's noise. So we want to not refuse to work. In this case, we want to actually deal with the noise and handle And so what the property that we call, that has already been called this, is fuzziness. We want to be noise resilient, right? So I want to basically output R, not R prime, as long as W is reasonably close to W.
Is there a reason why you bundle these together?
It is interesting to investigate separately, but since we can do both, you know, the more adjective you put on your paper title, the better. They're robust and they're fun, but we'll talk about it separately.
Are the solutions related to each other?
They're related, yeah.
They're related.
If it's three adjectives, then you have to come up with a new name, right?
Right.
The fuzzy, even if it's adversarially fuzzy?
Actually, it turns out what we do is adversarially fuzzy, so the adversary can. I'll explain it when we get there, okay? But that's not necessarily part of the definition. Think of it there.
So if you're combining everything, can you also combine the I and the I prime?
I'm confused.
Yeah, that's robust.
Yeah, that's robust. So
with the W and the W prime.
Yes, so we want robust fuzzy extractors. Let me get to the next slide and I'll show exactly what we want. So this is. What we want to think of, the fuzzy extractors have already been defined. So let me go through the definition. Okay. So what we want is the following thing. There is the extraction procedure that generates uniform R from W and the seed I. So there's W, there's the seed I, there's generation procedure, there comes R. And it also generates some helper string P. That's the string that you will send over to Bonnie, right, for her to do the extraction, and R is uniform ribbon given P. So then what the fuzziness property says is that you can reproduce this R if you are given P and any W prime that's close to W, right? So there's W prime that's close to W, there's P, there's a reduction procedure, outcomes R. And this is actually a definition that's due to Evgeny, Rafi, myself, and Adam from a previous paper, right? This is just a fuzzy extractor, this go over here. Okay. I'll make this disappear so you guys don't get confused. The new property that we add, and that's why it's in red, is the property of robustness, that as long as W prime is close to W, and if Eve sees this P, right, P is what you send on the public channel, right, so Eve sees P, produces some P tilde that's not equal to P, well, we will refuse to work if P tilde is not equal to P, and we'll work if P tilde is equal. And the refuse to work will be with 1 minus, with all but negligible probability, right? And the probability you take over the choice of W and the coins of everybody involved. So basically, this is adding robustness to the fuzzy extractors that have already been defined.
Do you really care? I mean, what if it happened to output R? You don't really care if Eve changed it or not. You just don't want to output anything different than R, right?
That's right. So it's actually potentially a stronger property than you need.
In our applications we do care, but in some weaker things you don't. But in our case, we do care. So, can you achieve this?
Why?
Well, it comes up as a dedicated case.
Let's keep. Let's speak.
I'm not entirely certain, but maybe we'll take some. I want to hear what you mean. Okay, so let's go back to the information theory. Key agreement setting, we have W of W prime, we have Alan, Bonnie, Eve. Alan uses the generate procedure of the robust fuzzy extractor to come up with R and P, sends P over, P tilde comes out, and Bonnie will reproduce, right, if P tilde is equal to P, and will refuse to work. If not, so the adversary is reduced to denial of service attack. And then you can use this R for all sorts of whatever you want, right, encryption, MAC, and so on. So now you have a uniform key, and we know how to do crypto with uniform keys. Okay. Now, what was previously considered that relates to this? Because there has been various prior work. So first thing that was considered is the case of the non-fuzzy case. Right, when W is equal to W prime. Or when W and W prime are not equal, but come from repeated IID, repeated identically distributed experiments. So you basically, you give a bit to Alan, a bit to Bonnie, a bit to Eve, you repeat this process, and each time the bits have the same distribution. And that was considered started by Maurer, considered by various combinations of subsets of Maurer and Wolf. It has also been considered this very problem, so not this restricted case, using random oracles by Goyen, Doris, Katz, Ostrovsky, Smith, and also has been considered when you are interested in the interactive setting. So Alan and Bonnie get to talk instead of just send one message. And in the interactive setting, these are the same these are the same authors that are before, so their names don't appear anywhere. the case considered by Marrunner Wolf and company limits the errors the same way as they're limited here. So they're either no errors or repeated IAT errors, not general distance case. And the Boyan et al. Paper does this in an interactive setting using computational security as a very good application of password-based keyring. But what you end up with is computational rather than information theory security, and a much more complicated construction if you look at what's inside. So we want to be non-interactive and we want to be information theoretic, and we also will end up with a fairly simple construction. Okay. And why do you want to be non-interactive? Let me consider another setting where you don't have a bunny, you have a single user who has a noisy key W, and the favorite example of everybody is some biometric, and that's all the user has, right? So you don't have an ability to store a secret key somehow. All you have is a noisy key W. And so then you can again apply the fuzzy extractor to get R, and then use this R to, you know, encrypt your hard drive or derive a public key secret key pair for digital signatures or signed messages or whatever you want to do with it. But you don't have any good storage. So next time you're going to need the same R, and you're going to extract it out of the same noisy secret because, well, it's not going to be the same because it's noisy, so it can be W prime. You put in this P, right, you produce, you get R. But a reasonable question is, where do you keep this P? Well, you have a disk that you're encrypting, so put it on that disk. But then you need to authenticate it to make sure it's right. So you have a key that you're authenticating with, but in order to derive the key, you need the P that is authenticated by that key. Right, so you get into this weird circularity. So you can't just do this trivially. You really need this extra property of robustness, because if you don't have trusted storage for P, it does need to be secret, but it needs to be authentic, right? Then you get P tilde here, you get R tilde here, and of course, depending on how you use R, using a different but related key may cause all sorts of problems, right? You don't want to do that. So you really need robustness. So what you want is R if P tilde is equal to P, and
does it really help you to get a bottom?
Well, it, no, so if you, you can't do better than this, right? Denial of service is always possible with an active adversary. So it doesn't help your functionality, but it helps your security. Make sense? Because otherwise you're really screwed, because then your hard disk secrets are gone. McKinney.
I just want to answer
Rivita's
question. Since errors in W prime adversarial, if for example you allow the output R rather than bottom in some cases, you might learn information about R.
Right.
You can control errors, and by learning the secret, the same secret or not, you can get information. So,
because the adversary would know whether you output R or
yeah,
bottom, and
that would be
the adversary knows whether
well,
you
good, so that. That's why I'm giving an example where you might care.
Yeah, that's good. Now, in this single user setting, non-interactivity is essential. You can't be interactive with yourself in the future. Right? So if we don't have Alan and Bonnie, if we have the same person, then you really only have one message setting, so that's what you want.
And how does interruption help with the two parties?
Well, it does because, for example, you can do password authenticated key reread protocols that are currently interactive.
Oh, you
do all sorts of. I mean, so it's really out of scope of what. Lots of other techniques.
You can do a random key with yourself too.
Let's take that. Okay, so I hope we convinced you why these things are useful. Now let's try to build them. And actually, somebody asked, why do we combine robust and fuzzy? Well, let's actually even consider robust extractors, right? So fuzzy disappears. Let's talk about robust extractors. Even that's interesting to try to build. So here's an idea. Well, take a regular extractor and add a MAC to it. Right, that's sort of the first thing that comes to mind. What are you going to MAC? Well, the point is that this is what you're worried about. You're worried the adversary will change this. So authenticate it with a MAC. Right? We all know that MACs exist, so we just do that. We can use an information theoretic MAC. And then you output as your P the index and its tag. Right? Sigma is the tag that the MAC holds. So that all works, except MACs need keys, and you don't have a key to put in. So that's sort of the problem. Well, you could try to put R as a key, but if I changes, then R changes, and then your MAC has to work with a different key and still reject messages, and how do you build such a related key MAC, and that's essentially where the problem is.
So what about somehow using W for the key?
That's exactly what you need to do. But that ends up with a little bit of a circular reasoning, right? So I will be extracting from W, but W will be authenticating I. Right? So if you need to be careful about how you do these things. But that's really what you will end up doing.
But what is the solution? So the Wolfthal, the Wolfmauer, the...
I'll show you this. Like, you saw my next slide.
Okay.
Yes. So actually, this is it. Right. So let's see the Maurer-Wolf construction, exactly how they did it. Okay. So before we see the construction, a little bit of notation. There are unfortunately letters that people need to remember. So W is the secret, and let's say its length n, and its mid-entropy is m. M stands for mid-entropy. And then let's consider the gap between the length and the entropy. Okay, we'll call that g, right? So that's what's the non-entropic part. Here's the Maurer-Wolf construction. Take your string w and split it into three parts, a, b, and c, and essentially we'll use the three parts independently. Okay, so what we'll do is we'll extract out of a using simply, you know, universal hashing, multiplication over a binary finite. So you take your seed I, you multiply A by I, and you truncate. This notation means truncate from bits from 1 to lambda, right? Where some lambda will figure out what it needs to be, and that's your R. Okay. And this will be epsilon uniform. Epsilon uniform means epsilon close to the uniform distribution. If basically, okay, so you're extracting out of N over 3 bits, and what needs to fit in there is how much you're extracting, plus the part that's maybe non-entropic, that's the entropy gap, right? Plus a little bit of the loss due to extractors loss, to log 1 over epsilon, right? So this is roughly the picture. The worst case is if all the entropy is here and the entropy is missing from here, right? So this gap needs to be here, this is the lambda, and then you lose a little bit to log 1 over epsilon because of extractors.
What's
lambda again? Lambda is this, how much you're truncating to. So you do A times I, that's product over finite field, so that's N over 3 bits long, and then you truncate it to lambda bits. And that's universal. Because otherwise it won't be uniform, right? Because there's not N over 3 bits of entropy in A. So you have to truncate it to something. And if you truncate it enough, then it works.
So that assumes very strict restriction on mean entropy, right? So
exactly. Mm-hmm. Right. So this means that we can extract, how many bits do we extract? The mean entropy that was there minus 2/3 N. Right, we waste 2/3 N, so in particular we can't extract anything if we've got less than 2/3 of the entropy. So if the gap is greater than 1/3, you're done for. Okay. So that's what we do for the extraction part. And then for the mac part, well, we need to mac I, right? So we take I, we multiply it by B, and we add C, that's the linear, right, mac, the affine, I guess, mac is a pairwise independent hash function, and therefore it's a good Mac. And I'll explain a little bit later why it's a good Mac, even when B and C are not uniform. Right? So B and C are not necessarily uniform. And basically, this is going to be delta secure, again, if N over 3 is bigger than the entropy gap. Now we don't need lambda because I'm not extracting anything. It just needs to be bigger than the entropy gap, plus a little bit for the Mac security. So the worst case here roughly looks like this, where, let's say, you know, if C is completely non-entropic, this is unsecure, because it's just linear. You double B, you double the Mac. I mean, you double I, you double me. You can't double over binary finite. You can multiply by something. So you need a little bit of entropy in C, and as soon as you have a little bit of entropy in C, everything's okay. That's the intuitive reasoning how this works. Yeah? No, except that, well, it's actually, right, so the sophistication of it is not that great. You extract from 1/3 of the bits, and you mac using the other 2/3 of the bits. And both of these are very simple functions. You multiply and add. So that's all that's happening. And the important thing is that you need the entropy to be at least 2/3. Okay. Why it's secure, I haven't done the formal analysis, and I'll do a little more formal analysis in our own construction so that you get some of the flavor of how it's done.
Just a general question. Related. If the source is deterministically extractable, then you have no problem whatsoever, right?
Then you don't. If the source is deterministically extractable, then you don't need to authenticate the seed because it's deterministic. So then it's as good as being given a random string.
Can't you say that realistically sources are deterministically extractable?
you shouldn't ask me about realistic things. But I think the answer is no, because you don't know. Let's take quantum key agreement, right? This, you don't know what...
For instance, any efficiently sampled source...
No, but it's not efficiently sampled because you don't know what you've observed. Right? I sent you some qubits, and you've observed some of them and modified some of them. So what you received is A, different, and B, you know something about it and you have no idea what.
So the whole point of quantum agreement is that you cannot...
No, then you do privacy amplification. That's exactly...
So, but the point is that the same mechanism that makes the adversary learn part of the information also makes sure that this part is not taken from such huge memory. I don't know, I'm just wondering whether...
So, I don't...
In actual scenarios, whether you can deterministically extrapolate.
I think the only actual scenario that people really use is the quantum stuff, right? There's also people talking about noise, that we measure cosmic noise differently than the adversary measures it, and so on, and I think that's nice and theoretical. But quantum stuff people actually use. I'm not qualified to tell you what they do, but this is a natural...
Quantum
key agreement? Sorry?
Quantum key agreement?
Yeah, of course, like over miles and miles of fiber.
But then what control does Ian have, except in her service?
Well, it's miles of fiber, you don't know where she is.
But the moment you touch it, it's measured and it collapses to some...
Adam?
You
want to say?
So this is, in the quantum case, what happens is Eve measures and she learns a little bit of information, and then if she learns a lot of information, you see some disturbance. Okay, but you see a lot of disturbance just due to the fact that you're sending, you know, one photon at a time over, you know, 65 miles of fiber or something, and so you're going to get tons of natural noise. So you can only notice adversarial sort of perturbation if there's tons of it.
And then you really don't have deterministic extraction because you don't know where the adversary is sitting. So I think that's really the only natural setting. Everything else, come on, we can get uniform, we can flip coins. It's where the adversary is.
There are errors, you cannot do it. I mean,
right.
Well, I mean, so I'm saying, even if it's sufficiently extractable, deterministically extractable, this is not obvious, right? Because you have those indicators in double prime. So you extract it in double prime.
Yeah, you extract from a robust extraction.
Okay. Let's move on. Okay, so let me show you, actually, so this is the Mara Wolf, right? You split the string into two parts that are independent, essentially, and you use one part to extract from and the other part to authenticate. And you need all three parts to have some entropy in them, which is why the two-thirds. And then, just to finish this off, right, this is your P. The public is still I and sigma, as we talked about. That's what you said. This is sort of the obvious. Okay, so let's talk about our construction. What we do is break this independence. Okay. So we split the string into two parts, and this V is some parameter that we'll figure out in a little bit what it needs to be. And what we do is we do the same extractor, we do I times A, but we don't use all of this, we'll use the bits. So okay, so let's think about the length a little bit. This has N minus V bits in it, right? And we use all the bits but the first V of that. And that's the stuff that we extract. And then the other bits are carried on and added to B. And that's the MAC. So the first B bits are not here, they're here, and they're used for the MAC. Now, the MAC length is V. Right? That's the part to observe. Because this is V bits, we're just adding. And the extraction length, how much did we extract? We extracted N minus 2V.
M minus
2B.
No, M.
N minus 2B or and this thing. Nancy.
Right.
Minus 2B.
No, but you're extracting only mean entropy, so you have to extract M.
I haven't told you to set V to. Right, but yes, that's exactly what happened. Now, how do we prove security of this? I'll go a little more detail, but roughly here's what happens. The important thing is that R looks uniform even given sigma. And before, these two things were independent, so it was OK. Now you really have to be careful and argue that they're jointly uniform. Right. And they're jointly uniform, well, let's see. R and sigma are just an extractor. So basically, as soon as you loop R and sigma together are N minus V bits long. Right. So as soon as you lose a little bit more than the entropy gap, and minus V bits long. So if you lose V, which is greater than the entropy gap, you will become uniform because they're a good extract. And the other thing that you need, okay, so actually let's get this, let's get to the extraction. So what you lose roughly is that we can extract N minus two entropy gaps. Right, that's the length of R. Because we lose one entropy gap for here and we extract N minus. And another way to see that this is M minus G. So M is the most you could have hoped to extract, but we lose another entropy gap, right? That's what we're looking at. Which is 2 times N minus 0 over 2, right? So if you look at these two things, we subtract less, and then we also have a factor. Okay. And then how do you argue secret security of the Mac? Well, the Mac is secure as long as, again, it's long enough. As long as you don't have all the entropy gap covering B. That's the rough intuitive thing. So as long as V is bigger than the entropy gap by log 1 over delta, then you're delta secure. So, you know, for each bit, you double the security. So this is our construction. Let's actually see a little bit how you analyze. What you prove is fairly straightforward. You prove that R comma sigma, which is defined as AI plus B, where A is long and B is short, that is a universal hash family. In other words, it has few collisions. That's what universal hash family is. You know, going back to Carter and Wagner. And then in this family, let's just be careful. I is the key here, right? And AB is the input. Because you're extracting out of AB using I as the key. And that's okay by leftover hash lemma, you get everything you need. And then for robustness, you argue that sigma, which is this funny thing, AI truncated plus B, is strongly universal. Strongly universal is the same thing as pairwise independent, just a different name, also going back to Carter Wagner. And in this case, the key and the input are different, right? A and B is the key, and I is the input, as it should be for the Mac. You're macking I using A. So you've got this funny duality again. And this is okay. Essentially, the proof goes back to Marowolf. The proof that this is okay, even when the key is non-uniform, right? When the key is uniform, this is well known. When the key is non-uniform, you have to work it. So let's see.
But you didn't explain why did you bother making a construction if there was already a construction by Marowolf?
Hmm?
Oh, I see.
So we extract. First of all, the threshold is better, right? Here you have to have 2/3 entropy, you have to have 1/2 entropy to get anything, and then there's also a factor.
The threshold of the 2 is optimal, so this is optimal entropy.
You're rushing it. Okay, so let me show you why this is okay. You've got what we need to show is that if something is strongly universal, which means pairwise independent, then it's a good Mac even with non-uniform keys, as long as they have some entropy. So suppose Mac is a pairwise independent hash function, right? So Mac W of something is pairwise independent. What does that mean? It means that for all possible inputs I and J, if you look at a table of, you know, the tag of I and the tag of J, then you get this nice table where in each square you have, so how many keys could have possibly given you, you know, sigma 3 for j and sigma 2 for I? Well, here are the keys, and they're the same number of keys as here, 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 here. Right? So all tags are equally like. That's what pairwise independent means. Just to fix some notation so that you remember, you don't have to read this, you've seen this. Okay. So there are 2 to the n keys, as there are in our case, because the length is n. Then each square contains, well, just do the arithmetic, 2 to the n minus 2v things in it. Now, what is ifc? ifc is that you send some Mac, right? That's what a one-time Mac is. And she's trying to modify it. So once she sees this, she can basically select the column, right? And everything else is gone. That's the column. And let's say she decides that she will guess that the Mac of j is sigma 2. What are the odds that she's right? Well, so this is the square she selected, the circle. So this thing has how many keys in it? Well, it has, we said, 2 to the n minus 2b keys. And what is the probability of each key? Well, we have mean entropy m. So the probability would have been 2 to the minus m, except Eve has seen v bits of information. That's the tag that she saw, sigma 3. Right, so from her point of view, the entropy goes down, so the probability goes up, so it's 2 to the v minus m now. And so you multiply this together, that's probability with success. There are this many keys, the probability reaches this, and you get that multiplying them, you get 2 to the g minus v. So as soon as the v is a little bit longer than entropy gap, v's success goes down exponentially. So this actually goes back to Marvel. So this is our construction, just what you've already seen. Notice that it's extremely simple. You do one multiplication and one addition, right? That's it. And there is a result due to Dodis and Spencer that implies that m greater than or equal to 2 is necessary. There's nothing you can do if m is less than or equal to 2. And before us, people actually needed m over 2 and over 3, so and also extracted qubits. So this is why this is important. Okay. And this is a way to look at this construction if you don't want to look at the math, right? Very simply, you use W and the key to extract, and then W is a key to Mach, the extractor. So now how to make it fuzzy, because that's what I promised. Here's the tool that we will use in making these things fuzzy, and it's the same tool as we used to make fuzzy extractors in the paper that was like this. The tool is called Secure Sketch. You start with an input W, and you compute something that we will call S of W, a sketch. And for our purposes, we only need to consider restricted secure sketches that are some k bits long. And then, given the sketch and some W prime that's close, you can recover the original W. And for the Hamming metric, this S of W can be a linear function. In fact, all it is a syndrome of a linear error correcting code, if you know what that is. If you don't worry. Just know that it's a linear function. It's some k bits long. And if you have, this is the kind of code you need. You need a code of dimension n minus k that corrects t errors. And it's over binary.
How close do W and W prime need to be?
Well, so this is a trade-off, right? The more errors you correct, the greater your k, and so the more your entropy loss will be. You get into however good, ask a coding theorist, but not me, right? So however good the codes you can build, that's how close.
So really, if you're talking about biometrics, then these things really won't work for it, because there's W prime are rarely close.
So people have things where, you know, they transform your irises into Hamming strings that are, I don't know, within 20% of each other if they're the same iris, and within 50% if they're not. So you're 0.8 close, whatever that means. But I'm really the wrong person.
Because it seems that this really is your most natural application.
I actually don't like biometrics.
Hmm?
Biometrics are rarely secrets. Right? So they're not. I think quantum key agreement is a much better application.
The whole idea is that you want to do the whole thing with biometrics is that you do want to do them secret. You want to have thermal biometrics. So what?
Right, but
exactly
I can capture your fingerprint and your iris and all sorts of things without. That's really.
What?
Without too much trouble. With a good camera, I can capture even your retina. So why do you think it's secret? But that's totally separate debate.
Revocation is a problem.
Right.
But the whole issue is that, you know, with what kind of a very good camera? This is going to be effort that big institutions would have to do this thing. But if you're talking just about when you go to register for Yahoo, then you don't want your fingerprint there.
Okay, let's take this offline. So I'm not sure what the right parameters are for compute biometrics.
So what applications do you have where it would come into play?
I think quantum key agreement is the right one. Bounded storage model is not as much an application as a biometric. Quantum key agreement is something people actually agree. Okay, so how do you build this thing? All right, let's actually try to keep on schedule. We have this construction, right? This is how we build non-robust fuzzy extractors. We use a key to extract, and W is a key to Mach. Well, the idea is very simple. We will just add to the Mach the secure sketch of W. Right. We will also authenticate the sketch. Okay, so the first question to ask is sort of logistical. How do you Mach a longer message? I've shown you how to Mach messages that are just the right length. And so I Mach IS and I output I, S, and sigma. And then how do you Mach a long message? Well, basically, you know, we have like AI plus B, and we'll just do A squared times S plus AI plus B. And if S is longer, you can also add a cube times the first part of S and the square root of the second part of S. If it's even longer, you know, just do this. So that's not a problem. Recall that A and B both come from W, right? So the macking of long messages we know how to do. So let's think about how to reproduce. I get some W prime and I get some S, and I recover using the secure sketch algorithm, I get W. I use my I, I put them through the extractor, I get R, and then I go ahead and authenticate and verify sigma and I get okay or not. I'm probably actually in the reverse order. I do the verification first before I put the extractor. Okay, now Eve comes and modifies S to give me S tilde, because she can do that. Well, if I didn't do any verification, of course I'd get some W tilde that's different. Notice this is neither W prime nor W. Who knows what this is? And I get R tilde out. And so now, well, you say the Mac will save me because I'll put S tilde here. And the verification of the Mac will check everything so things will be good. The problem is that I have a different key now because this W has gotten modified to W tilde. So now I have a different key. And so this answer will also be screwed up. So who knows what this means. We got into circularity again. We want to authenticate S using a map with the key that is computed using S. And that's circularity. So just putting up the Mac, this is the Mac that I proposed. Right, A squared plus A plus B. This is the verification that we're doing. I'm not even bothering with abstraction, because that's the verification is the interesting part. This is what you've already seen. Yeah, but that's not the important part. I should also be A tilde. Or can be, but let's focus on the S. Right, because the adversary does get to modify I. And sigma, of course, too. So this is the circularity that I talked about. But here's a nice observation. If you know the offset between W prime and double, and you know the offset between S tilde and S, then by linearity you can actually compute the offset between W tilde and W. And that just takes a little bit of working out the linearity. Because remember, the sketch is linear. So that was a condition that we need. So you know delta W. So what we need is that for all delta W, given this, a Mac with W of IS, it's hard to forge a Mac of W plus delta W of I tilde S tilde. And here's magic. Add A to the fifth. And of all people, you shouldn't be looking funny at me. Okay, so this actually
we have two constructions.
Right. So actually, this needs an acknowledgement to Hotek because it came out with a joint discussion between some subset of the authors and Hotek as well. So basically, if you do this, then you can prove that for any delta W, this is hard. For any fixed delta W.
Why?
Because if you consider, so you need to consider the difference polynomial, and it will be a non-zero polynomial in A as long as delta W is not zero. Fixed delta W, then it fixes delta A. So put in A plus delta A in here, figure out what the polynomial is, it will be non-zero. Why do I need at A to the fifth? Because there'll be five delta W to the fourths in there somewhere, or five A to the fourth delta W. So it'll be a polynomial of degree 4 in A when delta W is not zero. If delta W is zero, then you fall back on the original map. Okay, so it works. And this needs to be odd for reasons. This five. So you basically add the next odd coefficient after the next over. It falls out of the format. But it's for any fixed delta W. So it's the same as if we gave delta W to the adversary. Right? So this answers Tal's question as to whether we consider I think you asked that, I'm not sure if you did, right? Whether we consider adversarial modification of this or not.
Yeah.
The answer is we can, because that's anyway the analysis we do. Okay, but you can consider different models. So basically, this is the construction. The construction is still the same, the Mac is just a little funny. That's it. And so, recall that without errors, we managed to extract n minus 2 entropy gaps, or another way to think of it is everything we could minus an entropy gap. Okay, so there's a minor problem that this S reveals k bits about W. So what happens? You decrease the entropy, and B, you increase the gap. So you will lose this k twice. You lose it once here and once here. You don't want to do that. Seems hard to help losing k, but you don't want to lose 2k. K is the length of the sketch of S. So K is the error correcting information. Well, because min entropy decreases, and as min entropy decreases, the gap increases. So because I lose two gaps, because of this two. That's what. So you've got this is N, this is M, this is G, and this is what I extract, right? So if g increases, then I lose it twice. That's just because of our construction. That's what it loses before. So we don't want to do that. But I can't avoid decreasing the min entropy because I'm revealing k bits of information about S. So what am I going to do? What I can do is avoid increasing the gap. How do you avoid increasing the gap? You shorten things. How do you shorten things? Well, this is a linear function. S of w is a linear function. So basically, take it out. Right, so let's C be everything but that information about W. So now you've reduced that by k bits as well, and now work with C instead of W. So everywhere where you would have put W, work with C instead, the orthogonal component essentially, the independent component.
Sorry. Mm-hmm. What's C? How do you compute C?
So S is a linear function.
Yeah.
It goes from n bits to k bits. You complete it to full rank. And you use those n minus k completion rows or columns, whichever. And that's your C. Make sense? Okay, so now you have all the information except what was stored in S, but the thing is shorter. So you've reduced the min entropy, but you haven't reduced the gap because you're working with a shorter string. So now you only lose one k. So here's the bottom line, right? Given an error correcting code, and now you have to ask coding people how good code they can give us. This is how much we extract. We extract, this is as before, this is what we lose due to the secure sketch, and this is what we lose due to giving the adversary control over the error. Because once you give adversary control over the error, that's the information adversary has, so basically this is the volume of the Hamming ball, and log of it. You have times that. The error is, the number of Hamming errors is t. T is what you want to tolerate. Delta W is the error.
Yeah.
Yes, it's delta W is the error. The error vector. Okay, and another result that also falls out of a very similar analysis is that we can also handle set difference errors, not just Hamming distance. So what is set difference? If you view W as a subset of a large universe, so here's your W prime, here's your huge universe. So the universe is all 100-bit strings or all 100-word strings or whatever. And you have some null set, your favorite strings among those. And so now you want to tolerate those kinds of errors as opposed to Hamming errors, but they're nicely reducible to Hamming errors in fun ways. And the bottom line is that then we can extract this many bits. All right, so what are that? That's as before. T is the number of errors you want to tolerate, and 2 to the alpha is the universe size. So if you want to tolerate T errors, that's what you lose. And this is using the BCH-based construction of, again, Doris Ostrovsky, myself, and Adam. Yeah?
Can you say that if B is the errors from the adversary, we don't lose the B? Okay. It just comes to the worst case that that really can't happen. But if they're independent of W, is the errors independent of W?
Okay. I think you're right. I'm not entirely certain because you have to use. Let's talk about that later. Okay, so let's look again at the single user setting that we talked about. The single user has a noisy key. Does now that we have this wonderful construction knows exactly what to do, right? You extract R, you use it to encrypt the disk, then you use it to decrypt the disk, and everything is great. There's only one problem. If C is in the single user case, the effect of of R.
No.
Makes no sense at all. So there we go. Okay. So is C the effect of R? before coming up. I'm sorry. It's late in the talk. Before coming up with the speed tilde, right? And we didn't say that. We gave Eve P, we didn't give her R. What is the effect of R? She sees some disk encrypted with R. What is that information theoretically? Who knows? Because maybe R is now used in a computational sense. So maybe information theoretically she knows all of R at this point. Maybe not computationally, but maybe it's information theoretically. So essentially, we have to give her some information about R. And the easiest way to model this is just say, you know, let's give her R for free, because who knows how R is being used. That's what we have to do. So we will allow Eve to see both P and R. And we call this notion of robustness, as opposed to the previous one, post-application robustness. Right? So pre-application is if hasn't seen the application of R, and post-application she has seen some application of R, which let's assume just leaks all of R, because we don't know any better than that. Turns out that all the constructions I've shown you, well, the two constructions, the fuzzy and the non-fuzzy, also work, but unfortunately you have to reduce the number of bits extracted by a factor of three. But they still do work. And this is really the first time this notion's appeared, as far as I know. All right, and then somebody said bounded storage model, so let's see the bounded storage model. And here I decided to change the characters. We will now have Alice and Bob. who share a secret key, and there's Eve. There's still Eve. Okay, and what else is there? There's a huge string in the sky, and it's so huge that nobody can know all of it, but people can sample from it. So Alice and Bob, using their secret keys, sample from the string to arrive at some secret W. And again, Eve has some information about the string, so it's not a uniform secret from the addresses point of view. And there may be some noise there, so what Alice gets is not the same thing as what Bob gets. Okay. And so Eve doesn't know the secret key, and therefore from her point of view, W still has entry because she doesn't know where it was sent. There's lots and lots of prior work. It was all started by Maurer. There are many people who worked on it. I'm not sure these are all of them. This current view of it, sampled and extracted, is due mostly to Lou, I think. This was mostly the noiseless case. The noisy case was considered by Ding and by Adam and Evgeny. And basically what people knew how to do is how to do when Alice and Bob are stateful, meaning they, in order to communicate more, they keep updating what's going on and they have to be synchronized, or when Eve is passive. Well, using robust fuzzy extractors, you just plug them in and you get stateless Alice and Bob and active Eve, right?
So what is an active Eve in this case?
Okay, so let's see this, right? So now they need to agree on R still. So Alice does the robust fuzzy extractor thingy to get R out, right? And has to send P over too, and Eve gets to modify. So that's the same state, it's the same active Eve as before. So And then Bob will do the same thing, and if Eve is messing with the channel, then he'll just refuse to work. Which is anyway what she can accomplish. Okay. But we have these results that basically show that parameters of these things are not great, and particularly you can't extract if there's less than half the entropy. So can we have a better solution for this special case than the robust fuzzy extractors I showed? And the answer is yes, because basically Alice and Bob have a secret key. So it's a much, much easier case to actually work with, right? Because you have a secret key.
How do you get the stateless out of this?
Oh, well, this just is. So what is stateless meaning? They have fixed SK, that's the same. But they don't need to update any secrets, right? Next time they want to sample the string, the next string comes in, you sample it, you do the same.
With the same as
right? No? Somebody said no? So this is just like what you would do in the bounded storage model without errors. Right? Without errors you would be able to work statelessly. So here you go. Okay. So the thing we need is actually simpler but harder to define. It's called keyed robust fuzzy extractor. It's the same as before, right? But here you put in a secret key in everywhere. Yeah. Sorry? Oh, three adjectives, right? So that's the threshold has been reached. Right. Okay. Well, the previous ones were telos, so there's also three there. Okay. And the crucial point, though, is they're not as trivial as they seem because the secret key must be reusable. Because we want to be stateless, so we want to do this many times over and over, right? Use the same secret key to extract. Okay, so how do we build them? The trivial approach is this. Now you don't have circularity, you have a secret key. So you don't need to put W as a key to your Mac. You just, you know, you put a secure sketch in, you put a seed into the Mac, and you key the Mac with the secret key that you have to authenticate the secure sketch and the seed, and then everything works great. The only problem is that these Macs are one-time Macs, and one-time Macs are only meant to be used once, and you don't get to remix the secret key. So the secret key is not reusable, and you need reusability to be stateless, so that Alice and Bob can keep doing this. So essentially what you need is that the secret key has to stay random, even given sigma, so that you can do this many, many times. So you can reuse the secret.
Why do you use computational map?
Because you want some information there to be secure. That's sort of part of the point of the bounded storage model, right? But if we use Mac that is also an extractor, then you will get exactly this. You will get that the secret key remains random even given sigma. So recall, extractor says what? That if you put something here, and you put a seed, which is also a secret key in this case, here, what you get is jointly uniform with the output. You need something that is both a Mac and an extractor at the same time. Okay. And here, but how are you going to do this? Here you need entropy. Won't work unless you have entropy. If you don't have entropy, you have some I and some S, and who knows if they're entropic or how much entropy they have. Well, just add W in there. Throw it in. It has entropy. You knew that it had entropy because that's where you started. And you can do it because the secure sketch will recover W anyway. So you can verify. Okay, so that's it. That's just the modification. Now what we need to do is build a Mac that's an extractor. So what we want is these two properties, right? We want that these things are jointly uniform, and this is unfortunate. But unlike extractors, here we want short outputs. We don't want long outputs. Because why? Because we want to, I mean, this is extracting something out of W that's going to waste. We want to extract a good key out of W, so we don't want to extract the waste. Okay, so idea one is to use pairwise independent hashing. It's both a good Mac and a good extractor, but it has a long secret key. And idea two is to do something a little more clever, which is to use an almost universal function to squeeze the input once, and then a pairwise independent to squeeze the input further. And these things can be built with short keys. And these things are already short, so they can also be built with short keys. So totally you get a short key. So what you get is that basically the output is log 1 over delta. Delta is the security you want to get. And the key length total is, these big O's are not big, 2, 3, 4. So this is the extraction parameter. This is the security of the Mac parameter. This is the input length. This is few collisions. So universal means collisions are exactly the probability you would expect out of a random function, and almost universal means they're close to that. And almost suffices because you just care for the analysis.
This is the construction by
actually, so honestly, I don't know exactly what's going on there. We modified it and got this, but I think there's also here you don't need pairwise independence because they're building extractors. Right, they're just both almost universal. Here. But for Max, you need pairwise independence on the outer layer, but not in the inner layer. Okay, so last slide. What have we got? We have built, now I have the three adjectives, keyless, robust, fuzzy extractors. And in the errorless case, previously what people could do is this, and what we can do is this. That's the length. And you can't do better anyway, at least the threshold. N over 2 is what you have to have for entropy. The case with errors before was only done with Eredor. I don't know why I said that. This is not true. There we go. Okay. Now we will say, ah. Right. So we do this without random orbit. And we have a new definition of post-application robustness that never was considered before, which really you wanted in the case when you're using this key before the adversary gets a chance to modify it. And in the keyed case, you have a nice new notion that's called extractor MAC. That's not an adjective. It's a sum of two nouns. What you get is stateless, active attack resistant, bounded storage model things with